Rocking chair sessions. With Elisa Di Battista, Maria Teresa Barber. Hello, everyone.
And welcome to RCS Rocking Chair Sessions, Volume 104, with Rafael Vargas Bernard. Welcome.
Hi.
That was pretty good.
I like names that are long because they remind me of my own name. So thank you for having your middle name included into your artist name.
Well, actually, Vargas is, so it's like my paternal. And then Bernard is my maternal. So if I would do the middle name, it would be Rafael Antonio Vargas Bernard.
Ooh, even longer.
Yeah.
I love those. It's one of those
stereotypes. He's not even dishing all the names. No, it's just like, you know, 75%.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you can't demystify. Oh, man, I already demystified something.
You don't want to hide everybody, right?
Right.
So funny. I wanted to take it back to when we first met. It was at the 777 building downtown. You're doing a lot of amazing work out there, and I kind of want to jump into that first. So can you please tell us about Mana Miami and the 77 building and kind of like the renaissance that's happening downtown right now?
Okay. So as far as Mana and 777, they decided like a couple of years ago they were going to do like a residency with Puerto Rican artists. That's how I found out about them. I didn't know very much about them. Well, I didn't know anything about them. And I know they were doing some like small residencies here in Wynwood before. And then they... anyway, Clock Tower got involved with them. They did a selection of Puerto Rican artists. I came here and I'm like, who, Mana, who are you? Oh, hi, this mall is a big mess. because of the hurricane, I guess, they didn't think about many of the people were going to get there, or maybe just they weren't ready yet, but the spaces weren't ready at all.
I know. And Hurricane Maria was pretty vicious.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, to get here, it was like a month of trying to get a plane ticket.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and I couldn't do anything because I had to, like, you know, get in line to charge a phone. So my dad, who lives up in Parkland, I would like send him emails and he would try to find it, and then he would call the people at the office over here. By the time that they would, you know, get the thing to buy the ticket, my dad ended up buying the ticket. I paid him, and they paid me, and whatever. Anyhow.
Well, all these modes to be able to get out.
Yeah, yeah. So, but when I got here, I got to destroy some things because since the building wasn't ready and I needed some materials, and I'm like, oh, you know, we're taking these things down. And I was like, oh, look, pieces of wall, look, studs, look, wires, cables. I still have a bunch of those. You know, you remember those old phone cables that used to make little bracelets out of?
Yes.
I have buckets full of those.
Wow. And you have to make something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I use them in my pieces and I do braid them sometimes. I replace like the regular like hookup wire you're supposed to use for the circuits with those because I look kind of cute. Yeah. But yeah. So I still
both aesthetic and then also have a purpose.
Yeah. So anyway, so they're starting with that, and they decided they wanted to do like another art space like they have in Jersey and Chicago.
Yes.
And they asked me if I wanted to stay and help out with like social media and some of the residencies, and I said yes. I started out like part time, and then now I work with them full time.
Excellent.
And you know, it's three of us there kind of administering the space. Kind of each one of us has like things that we concentrate on, but you know, we kind of all talk about everything.
Totally.
Like all ideas are open. We work a lot with people who are in the community, or you know, who have spaces inside the mall, and people who do not. We're very open to that. We were doing like third Saturday open houses. Actually, this past Saturday was our last one.
No.
Yeah, we're not going to do that anymore. Now we're going to do like three open houses a year and concentrate on small programming, like things that people want to do, like maybe just like a lecture or a workshop and a lecture, maybe a little party, you know, just. I think that the whole idea of doing like every third Saturday something was so people knew who we were.
Definitely.
And at the beginning there was a lot of attendance, people knew who we were, but then it gets tiring after a while, especially for the people in the community, because you feel kind of like obliged to do something because people are going to be in your space.
It's kind of like the open studios here, like they used to be traditionally once a month, and now it's more, like you say, it's more spread out so that people can develop a body of work or have new projects or new things to talk about when they see you a whole month later. So sometimes it's nice to have artist spaces just take a pause, break, focus on yourself and your practice, and then open it up.
I've been there in the space for a little over a year, and downtown has changed a lot. I mean, I don't know how it was like way, way before. I mean, I've been told different things.
It's had different eras,
but,
for sure.
Yeah. But when I got there, I mean, it was just, there was nothing happening. It was dead. And now, you know, like next to us, like two bars open up, like restaurants, there's a lot of movement at night. Like you see people on Saturday and Friday night. Like I get out of my studio at like 1 and 2 in the morning.
There's people
hanging out. And I'm like, wow. Before, I would get out and I'd like jump on the bike and get out of there as fast as I could.
Yeah, kind of derelict.
Yeah.
Forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And like a lot more spaces are being used now. There's more movement. I see more action. Like the locals are starting to like come forward to us. And, you know, I see also like movement from the DDA trying to like, again, because I know in the past they did promote a lot more artists and more like cultural happenings. Now they're doing that more. So, yeah. I don't know if it's all tied in, but probably, you know, someone does something a little here, affects something, you know, on the side down the
trickle
lockdown.
Effect, yeah.
Trickle effect. I don't know. But, you know, it seems to be working. We have a good group of people. All our artists are super awesome. They're all from different levels, different places, different disciplines, you know, anything from conceptual to some really great painting. And everyone gets along. We do lots of awesome little weird things. It's a space that's growing, so it's a lot of space to workshop new ideas. Mm-hmm. And you see a couple of the older, more like established artists going like, hey, you know what, I'm gonna change my thing up. Mm-hmm. And they do, and you know, it's interesting. It's I like to see what's going on. I don't really like try to get into people's business,
definitely,
but you know, since it's mostly glass, so you can see what people are working on. You know, I do walk around and go like, where that's coming from. You know, it's good to see people influencing each other. Mm-hmm. And talking like, mm-hmm, you know, I've gone to a lot of like complexes in different places, and you know, sometimes people don't really like, it's not really a community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I was gonna say there's a familial energy. I think we were at Friendsgiving when we first went to the 777 space, and you guys were having a potluck, and there were lots of different artists seated, and you guys are like, you didn't bring anything, doesn't matter, grab a plate, get some food, jump in, have a seat. And it felt very nice to have that, like the sense of family, like art family.
Yeah and it's good. And I mean, like a lot, you know, a couple of artists there, you know, have like very like interesting careers and are out of Florida a lot, but when they do come by, you know, they are friendly, you know, they are part of the community, even if they, you know, can't you know, go to all the activities. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's great too, that's part of the thing, you know.
And I do feel that you gave a home, or Mana gave a home to a lot of artists that have done a lot of things already, or to have like established, like I think Borscht is in Amana, right? Or Miami?
Miami is no longer with us now.
But they were there
for a
year.
For a while, and they're probably going to collaborate, or we're going to collaborate with them in a couple of things. But as in who we have right now in there, if I start saying artists, let's see, we have Lee Pivnik, we have Bernadette Despujols, we have Rafael Rangel, Sinfredo Chacon, Osiris Cisneros, we have Laura Marsh, we have, and I'm forgetting the big name because I'm an idiot, Agustina Woodgate. Yeah, you know, they put a microphone in your face and like you memorize all these things, and then like
I didn't want to put you in this spot,
like you got the microphone in your face, like, oh, like, you know, did you not say Julian Mayer? Oh, no, sorry. Actually, I kind of did that on purpose because I got nervous. And you know, we got Jenna Balfi, and then, you know, we have Vidium, who are like these awesome guys who used to do like Audio Junkies, who are, you know, sitting there like making crazy videos with old equipment and making music videos for like the most insane bands that somehow come down here. You know, Rap Bastard has a space with his like South Florida like music archive, and he does some interesting things there. Mm-hmm. And Emmett Moore has like a woodshop workshop, like something between sculpture and industrial design. I don't know. I love
very
what he
envious
does.
It's tools. Super nice. You walk by and you're like,
yeah,
oh,
you're like,
God, every maker's dream.
Yeah.
Like the sander and like the all the drills and circular saws.
Yeah, we saw that.
Yeah, beautiful.
We were doing our little
tour. Yeah.
And of course, we got, you know, like Dale Zine, who do it up all the time.
Definitely.
Jolt has a little space. Like you said, Borscht and Bookleggers.
Bookleggers, yeah. That's what I was talking about. I feel like you gave a home to a lot of like these smaller organizations, like cultural organizations that have been around for a while, you know. And I feel like that's also why Mana right away felt very much like
like home or part of the community.
South Florida, our community, because you have these guys in there too, you know, on top of like the artists that you
and the visiting artists that you have come in during Basel. Mm-hmm. How do you feel that you you found this balance between like this person who is always like, you know, not necessarily just in charge of, but like you're looking after the space, making sure everything's, you know, the programming is on point, you have like the artists to attend to, the spaces, things that are happening, and then you have your own personal practice.
I don't know, I've always been working.
Like, so you're a busybody.
I'm a busybody. Like before I came here, I was running an education program at the Contemporary Art Museum in Puerto Rico.
Nice.
So that was a more than a full-time job, and I had a studio in my house, which was nice for me and horrible for anyone who would visit my house. but you know, you do what you do, right? Yeah. So 3 hours, get up and go to work.
Totally.
And before that, you know, well, there was one time where I was like bartending and working, restoring furniture in an antique store, and you know, exhibiting and making art, you know, keeping a studio running. So it's like I'm kind of used to it. The only thing is like, okay, so now like the studio is where I work at.
Yes.
There was one time in my life where I was working at a gallery. I was helping administrate a gallery. It was more doing most of the grunt work, but I lived there. It was like a big house, and that was pretty weird and odd and uncomfortable and did not end well. this, on the other hand, it seems to be working pretty well for me. Mm-hmm. See, sometimes I notice that I'm spending more time in the office than the studio. Luckily, I have great coworkers who will remind me, like, I've seen you here in the office like a lot. Go up to your studio for a bit. I'm like, yes,
thank you.
Thank you. You're right.
Wow, those are pretty amazing coworkers.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's good to have people remind you that, you know, you got to do your stuff too, because you get focused on a project. You got to make that balance. And actually, balance. There's some pieces that I'm going to be working on soon that are about balance. I'm going to make a bunch of self-balancing robots that make themselves unbalanced by trying to carry different things and making odd sounds when they move around, which is kind of like I'm now kind of going in this direction away from like the cultural specific like Puerto Rico situations to like more of a personal thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's something that's been on my mind a lot, keeping the balance. And then I start thinking about my balance and then how everybody else balances things and how you can balance in different situations. Like, just even, like, ethics is just impossible sometimes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This sculpture, do you feel that you had a lot of, what's what I'm looking like, manualidades? Like, you were into, obviously, you went to a fine art school in Puerto Rico. I saw the Escuela
de Artes Plásticas de Puerto Rico, yeah. Before I went there, I also studied some art, mostly painting, over at the University of Puerto Rico in Mayagüez. I actually went there because what I originally studied was computer engineering at Georgia Tech.
Which explains at Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I was able to go into like engineering to that school, which happened to be also where like my dad studied, and like a couple of minutes away from my aunt's house. So like my move back to Puerto Rico was like perfect. Was like, I had a great time. Went there, studied, and then got picked up and did some work with the public arts project there with a friend who was administrating some projects. So I was helping him and bounced around, and then ended up in Old San Juan at the School of Plastic Arts or Fine Arts. That's how you translate it.
So it's always been like going the back and forth between these two worlds, like the more techie, electronic, maybe noise making, and then also like the traditional classical.
Yeah, well, you know, that's I've kind of like joined that together in the past like 5 years. Like I used to keep like my sound projects separate from my art projects. I do like painting and sculpture, and but mostly like performance also, and like, but I've kept everything like segmented in different, like, you know, disciplines or media. Like, they couldn't be all mixed together.
Different tabs on your website.
Yeah, I don't know why I kept them like that. And then I started joining things together just because I didn't have the time to like pursue all these interests at the same time. So it kind of started turning into this mutant, like, weird thing I do now, where I make like these paintings and sculptures that have like sensors, and they make sound, and they talk about things I'm obsessed about. And like, when you get next to them, it might, you know, might be your presence or your pulse or the temperature that makes a sound, whatever. But you know, they kind of also like do their own thing sometimes and kind of you know, glitch and whatever. But yeah, and I still do sound performance, but the thing is like the pieces now are also performative. Like either I can do it or the person who's in front of it can do it.
So it doesn't have to be you present in order to activate them.
No, okay. No. Some of them are just so simple as just proximity themselves, and then you kind of figure out like, whoa, if I get closer here, this happens. And if I move to the left, this happens. You know, and you kind of figure it out. But like now I'm thinking about this one thing. Paps commissioned like for me to do something for them for September, and it's like I'm gonna do like this bar, like a long time, like what, like 8 years ago I did this piece with a collection of records my godfather gave me. They're all like trio music and Puerto Rican folk music and old guarachas and really awesome stuff from like the 50s, and I thought, you know, like he used to tell me all these stories how they'd go like walk like 20 minutes up the side of the mountain to where like there's this like shanty where this guy is like, you know, bar slash convenience store, like bodega, whatever, right?
And they slash dance. Pharmacy, slash yeah, everything.
Yeah. Probably he was probably the dentist and the doctor too, you know? And then, you know, they'd all put on like their best clothes, walk up there. He said they'd go like barefoot so they wouldn't get like their shoes muddy. Because the idea was, you know, you'd go there and you'd like drink, and there would be like a little window where you get the drinks at, and then you can ask the guy to put on records, because they really didn't have like a jukebox. Sometimes they'd just have like radio on, whatever happened that day. And that was like their hangout, and they just talked and like, you know, made connections and shared news and stories and whatever. So like I took like that collection and I made out of like just, you know, repurposed wood, like a wall with a window and a table, and I put like a record player, and I just took it places and you know, let people like play with it and listen to the music. And since it was in Puerto Rico, it was easy. People like knew some of this stuff, and you'd always have like a clash of generation where you'd have like some, you know, some like 20-year-old or something going like, oh, what's this? And like there'd be like someone there who's like, oh, let me school you, let me tell you what you're listening to.
You have no idea.
Yeah. So it was nice turning that around. I ended up giving that to someone. Not the records, the structure itself. They're using it at some bar now, and it's doing what it was doing as an art piece, but
what, you know, it was meant to do. Yeah.
So like I'm gonna do something like that. Except, you know, it's not going to be so like cultural specific. I'm just going to make a lot of weird little easy instruments, like the bar itself. All the glasses and shakers and things will be mic'd in, and like there'll be like a little seating place where you can like bang on it with your hands, and you can do percussion. I'm making an air guitar. This is the third version. I've been playing with making an. It's called air guitar synth stick. It's because the original one is just a stick. It's a stick with two sensors, and you, one of them like takes like your hand movement, like as if you were strumming a guitar, and the other one is like on the neck, the distance does like the different tones. So like I'm gonna make the third one now, but this one's gonna like look like real metal, like it's gonna be like black and have hard edges.
Guitar stick, that's awesome.
So that's gonna be like in there too, and then a couple of like just cans where like when you drink them or you move them, like the movement of the can affects the sound, like the position. I like to do that too, because it freaks people out when they grab something or push something, like the position and the velocity and you move at like changes the sound. People like don't get it, so like, you know, they start acting like, you know, when like an animal or like a primate or a baby grabs something for the first time, they're just like shaking it, trying to figure out why it does what it does.
It's a discovery.
Continuing. Like, oh my god, how is this possible?
Just like make it the same movement, and like
this whole something. World of like sound art, and especially the contact mics and all that's just so you know, kind of foreign to me. It's like incredible, interesting when I see it and when I hear it, but it's just like I have no idea how this works, and I would be the worst sound artist ever. I think I feel like so limited because it's very technical,
technical. You need,
One of my professors was Leticia Sonami, and she invented like this glove where she has like all kinds of contact mics, or I don't know. So she could make music or sound with her glove and did performances with it. So and it was incredible.
So it would like interpret like the movement of her fingers and hands.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, nice. That's I believe I would. It looked incredibly cool. But for me, it's like if you say like, oh yeah, I put like a mic in here, and then, or it makes a sound when you come close, and I'm like, how is that even possible? It's just like this whole technology part behind it is, for me, it's like a mystery.
Yeah, and the fun thing is like the technology I use is really like obsolete stuff. It's like stuff that like you can get really cheap sensors and really neat things that maybe they're using like in college classes or for small projects like DIY projects.
Like Arduinos or something.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And some of that stuff, yeah. It's like somewhere between like the Arduino stuff and people the stuff that people use in to make like props for like movies or like cosplay or things like that. But it's not that super high end, high tech, you know, inaccessible. Like I don't know. I like to use something more accessible, like something that if you saw it, you're like, hey, if I want to play with something like that, I can grab it. Because, you know, I do make a lot, all the code that I do for my things is open source and all the circuits too, but I also use a lot of other people's open source code sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, like, if I'm just going to, you know, borrow, I have to let people borrow too, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't hide, like, cables or circuits or anything in my pieces. I completely integrate them as elements in the piece. Mm-hmm. Also because, you know, besides they're... They have a beautiful aesthetic value, to me at least. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm all about transparency. And how can I like ask people to be transparent if I'm not transparent in my work?
When did this love of like this gesture of sound and the memory to objects? How early do you feel you started associating those things or appreciating or looking at them or wanting to investigate them yourself?
Okay, so I recall I'm at least from 7 years old, like scraping stuff and like hitting glass windows in the car and making weird little sounds like banging on things, and my mom just freaking out like, ah! And then like, it's hilarious because my dad like plays really great guitar. He's directed like choirs and churches forever. You know, they're very musical people. My mom sings like very well. She's trained. Like, you know, they know their stuff.
We were both touched.
Yeah.
So a very musical family.
But then like they're a very traditional musical family. Yeah. So having you know, a child who's like, you know, programming weird things on the keyboard instead of, you know, practicing for his piano class and like, you know, hitting a piece of can for like 20 minutes and going, ooh, look at the different sounds I can make with it. And then, you know, that was just like really, you know, it was something I had to deal with. For a while, I thought like, you know, am I the only person who likes to, you know, explore sound this way? Maybe those weren't the words I used, but, you know, anyway. And then when I was at Georgia Tech my sophomore year, there's this place called Under the Couch, which the couch building was like one, like a half administrative, half, I don't know, I think it was like physics class or something. I never took a class there. But under it, there was a space that sold like buffalo burgers, buffalo chicken burgers and fries and things like that. And they had like a little stage. And then like, you know, weird people would play there.
Interesting people would play there.
Oh, sorry. Interesting people. Hey, I'm weird myself, so it's okay. You know, I feel like if I'm accept that I'm weird, I can...
Totally.
You know, other weirdos
You're
I can call
weird. You're in kindred spirits
here. All right, cool.
Can hitters. Other can hitters.
I was just sitting in my room and I hear like these insane, like metallic, like gongy, like reverberating sounds and some weird tape loop, and I'm just like, who's listening to this? Like, this is great. So like I stick my head out the window and I see some just like random punk kids hanging out in front of Under the Couch, and I'm like, well, maybe I should go check that out. And it was the first like noise band I saw. That was in 99.
Cool.
And then I was like, wow, so this liking odd sounds and, you know, going through weird elements of musicality or thinking of music as a concept, not really as a set of rules, is something that can, I know, I gave me permission. So I just started making like weird stuff on the computer, just like altering sounds and whatever. And then eventually when I had a little money, started buying equipment and started making a lot of weird things with like MIDI and altering some things. And then I went through some like weird situation where I decided like I was anti like technology. Oh. I don't know.
I think you have to go through your phases.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Right? Hey, right? It happens. I burnt my computer, like a bonfire.
Oh,
I did a whole
thing.
Oh, yeah. And then I decided I wasn't going to like do like objects anymore. I did performance for like maybe like 4 or 5 years. I just did performance. And
why do you sound more sound performances?
No,
or?
Just like physical
movement.
Like just literally, I one of the pieces, I dragged myself through the gutter. I went to this fair, and I had a guy, I was selling different parts of my body where you could have a bouncer punch me, and I had this huge bouncer for a dollar. You could choose. It was all about, you know, exploitation of young artists, blah, blah, blah. So I'd give people, like, the opportunity to exploit. And so you'd pay a dollar, and people didn't believe it. Like, I had people give, like, $5 and choose, like, chin, chest, you know, forehead, whatever. You know, they'd give a whole list. And when they see, like, the first punch was real, because this is, like, a big guy. The bouncer was a friend of mine.
Oh, no.
But, and before we started, I was like, dude, remember? Like, I reminded him of like, you know, like, sometimes you do, like, really, like, not great things to your friends sometimes. So, like, I reminded him of, like, not great things that happened between us, and I'm like, you know, just take
remember
it out.
Remember that time I owed you money?
Yeah, yeah. Something like that.
Oh, so, my God. But also remember
all the bad things I did and then punch me.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
And so there was one guy, so after the first punch, he was like, no, no, stop. And I'm like, no, man, you gotta understand, the customer's always right. You already paid. You don't get a refund. He's like, no, no, I don't want to see it. And I'm like, well,
Humanity. It's
still gonna happen.
No way.
And it was like a punch to the nose, and the guy missed. All right, so I had to, like, set up again, and I'm like, you know, you hit my cheek, gotta hit the nose, and, you know, a little blood came out, but it was all right.
Oh my goodness.
There was another one. I it was at another fair. I wanted to be the person who moved money around the most. So they allowed me on the VIP opening to push a penny. I was on all fours, and with my nose, I pushed a penny through all the different booths in the fair. Did another one where, like,
where was that?
That was in Puerto Rico
at an art fair?
At an art fair, yeah. They used to do at the convention center there. So Yano Guedes was the curator, and she did, like, four fairs. They're pretty nice. There was another one where I took all the hair off of my left leg with tweezers.
Ouch.
I was
that's painful.
And I would do, like, little drawings, and it was kind of like some weird, like, ritual thing. Like, I had Three Kings candles that are sort of used for rituals, but also used for, like, hurricanes. And
hair is pretty and, ritualistic sometimes too.
And I would, like, melt them and put them in little boxes, and I just take out hair with the tweezers and make a drawing in the wax, seal it, and then next box until I finished them. Ended up, like, doing the whole left leg. Took me, like, about 6 hours.
Oh my
and then
God.
I'd do silly things, like I would eat people's secrets. I'd set up, like, a little altar and have people, like, write on, like, edible paper but with Sharpie. So it was kind of, like, you know, sort of not
that
bad
healthy.
For me, but not that healthy. Yeah, I used to do a bunch of stuff like that. Yeah. And, like, I used to do, like, games for people, like, for people on bicycles and stuff. I'd do, like, weird alley cats. I did, like, one game. It was, like, Mario Bike, where I had people put, like, three balloons on their bicycles, kind of like Mario Kart. And then I gave them little sticks with thumbtacks. And they just, like, ran around, like, popping each other's butt, you know, balloons. It was, you know, I used to get into a lot of trouble. I'm more calm now.
Wow. It reminds me of that guy. Who was the guy who had himself nailed onto a Volkswagen? Do you remember that performance artist in California?
No, it sounds scary.
That wasn't the Chris Burton guy, was it?
It was, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's pretty cool. You remind me a little bit of him because he was also crawling in, like, over.
Yeah, but he got shot in the shoulder.
In the shoulder, yeah. But another friend told me, yeah, that bullet was really small, so that didn't hurt as much because it was such a small bullet, you know. I have great friends.
Okay.
But
it's still a bullet.
Yeah, it's still a bullet. I think he crawled.
I took a BB gun once. It did not feel good.
Over glass or something like that too, right? Yeah. So it was really this, like, painful, like, I want to hurt or I want to...
It was one of just, like, blowing people's minds, but also kind of, like, pushing myself to the limit, seeing how far I could go. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I wanted to prove something to myself. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I could make something with, like, no budget and just my body, and then, like, pay for it with myself.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that's kind of, like, the idea.
Basically, you stripped yourself from everything else. I mean, you burned the computer and everything. You know, it was just you and your body kind of, like, figuring this out, kind of paying for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, I started doing, like, music performance again, just sound performances. Started doing, like, some weird, beady, like, you know, like, low-tempo stuff, and then started getting back into doing noise, and then all of a sudden I started moving it into my art, and then I was like, oh look, okay, I said no to technology, but I've been editing videos, so like what am
I breaking
come on,
you're breaking,
you know,
your own,
so might as well just keep on going.
So you did buy another computer.
It's like, okay, hey look, now I'm using Photoshop, what's going on?
I think it shows that you shouldn't limit yourself. Sometimes you're like, I'll never do that, that's not for me, but it, I mean then you want to do it, then what's wrong with trying it? So if you wanted to, you know, be like, okay, well, maybe this is something I want to do. And then you brought them together.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's good that I've concentrated on, like, different things separately. Because, like, when I've brought everything together like that, now it just kind of, like, falls into place. Like, I don't have to think too much about it. I know where things intersect.
Each thing does,
And then, like, sometimes, you know, like, integrating sound into, like, visual art is a little, you know, it can be difficult. Because, like, sound can be conceptual, but can be abstract, but in different ways. So, like, making it all work together sometimes is a little, like, complicated. Or getting it clear in my head, or justifying it to myself, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, it works. Mm-hmm. I'm actually happy with what I'm doing. Like, I'm not gonna say like the stuff that I've been doing before was not good, because I mean it probably was. But I'm more happy with what I'm doing now. Like, I always felt like, you know, something, like I was lacking something. Like, I was really down on my art. Like, I know it wasn't bad, but, you know, I was like, ah, there's something missing. Mm-hmm. Now I don't feel like there's something missing. Now I'm just like, okay, what can I do next?
Mm-hmm. You had to go through all those venues to eventually reach that point.
Yeah.
Totally. The painting that you used to do you feel you were more like abstract or like classical? Like, because the paintings I see now are like very motion driven.
No, they were pretty emotional. Like, a lot of the stuff I was doing when I was just painting was very, very, it was just pure expression. I mean, there were some figurative elements to it. Sometimes it was very, very figurative, but there was like a lot of disgusting textures with dirt and sand and like fibers and just messes. I remember I did one painting where like I kind of did the painting and then I started ripping the panel apart and making textures, and then I painted it again, just kind of fixed some of the mistakes but not all of them, and it was like really gross and disgusting, but it, I mean, that's what it was all about. Mm-hmm. And then there was a point like where my painting just got like more just very glitchy figurative. Like, I would take like pictures and photos of people and different elements and kind of just cut them up in Photoshop and put them all together, and then I would project them on the canvas and kind of draw them and then move the projector to make a glitch and actually glitch the real image and then put it back on and then kind of build upon like that. Now and then after that I went like, hey, you know what, I'm just gonna go full technology, and I started using plotters, like vertical plotters and horizontal plotters, and I would just do line drawings. I'd reduce, like I'd either draw something or I'd take a picture and I'd reduce it down to 3 or 4 shades. And then I would remove all the color information, so just like the contour lines of the different shades. And then I'd corrupt the file a little, mess with it, and then throw it at the, you know, through the computer to the plotter.
Breaking the rules.
Yeah. And then, to the point where, like, if I saw that the plotter was, like, doing the right thing, like, it was just working too well.
You're like, you're still wrong.
I'd take, like, the piece, the panel of wood behind it and, like, shake it a little, or I'd pull on the string to kind of throw it off balance so it would make a mistake.
And that's where the balance came in.
Yeah. So, like, this past year, I decided to stop, like, using, like, the automated, like, plotters. Like, I used it for a little bit, and then I'm just doing the lines by hand, and I'm just kind of, like, imitating the glitch by hand.
The blotter did the line for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
The blotter is.
Yeah, it's just a machine where you just put, like, plotter.
Plotter.
Yeah. Oh,
this is, like, our weaving plotter. Plotter.
Yeah, okay. I bought like these kit plotters. It's just basically like the vertical one is 2 motors that hang on a wall and a little motor that make a pen or a brush or whatever go up and down. Mm-hmm. And then the horizontal one is kind of like one of those like CNC routers or laser cutters or whatever.
I think our Cricut can do that.
Potentially.
Potentially.
I really like the idea of the hand, because like even when you breathe, like the motion of the line sometimes responds to that, unless you have like a wicked straight line hand, even though you're breathing. But it has those, we have irregularities, so I think it'd be really fascinating to like, are you breathing? Did you just like run a 5K? Are you relaxed? Like, what would those plotter lines look like if you do them manually?
So like that, I kind of like decided to stop doing with the plotters, that kind of thing. So I've been making like little machines that kind of move by themselves. Like I had this one piece that I used for a performance a little while ago, and it was about I did a whole series on Brock Pierce in Puerto Rico. He's like this Bitcoin mogul. He was a child star in Mighty Ducks, and he was in the Mighty Ducks. He was in this company where that was like the first like sort of like Netflix precursor, but they got shut down for some like child abuse or scandal. And he was like the only guy who did not get arrested because he settled out of court and then like moved from the U.S. Then he made his money with a bunch of kids in China. He had like a little sweatshop where he had kids playing World of Warcraft and other like online RPG games, and he would like sell like online like whatever they would win, like the gold and the weapons and whatever, to people. Made a bunch of money with that, and then he got into like cryptocurrency.
Wow.
Which is
huge right now. They have classes of those everywhere.
But for example, like Bitcoin, like the bubble burst like a while ago, and that's worth half of what it was. Mm-hmm. And that's happened since he's been on the board of the Bitcoin Foundation. A lot of people got off the board.
Question marks.
Yeah, the bank that backs this cryptocurrency he invented under a different name, then changed the name to Tether, is this one cryptocurrency that is supposedly backed by real money. The bank that backs it is in Puerto Rico and has been declared insolvent. Like all these, and he wants to turn Puerto Rico into a crypto utopia, a bunch of crazy things. So I did a bunch of pieces about this guy. And one of them kind of emulates like what it is to like mine Bitcoin, but it mines color. So it's just like this robot arm that randomly moves around and like solves a random equation, and when it solves it, it like picks out like the red, green, and blue values of the color of the painting that's under it, and just like, you know, shoots out a tone with the frequencies relative to the red, green, and blue frequencies. And it's just like the logos of those companies with like a bunch of like different like, you know, blotches of paint that represent ones and zeros and bits of information and whatever. But that's like kind of like where I went from, like, instead of having the automated drawing, like there's an automated part of the piece. But then going back to the drawing part, so now I want to do these things. Like I bought like these little sensors that you can like put on your arms and wrists and kind of record your movement in X, Y, and Z space and like three dimensions and the velocity. So I'm thinking, you know, I can just wear these like during the day because, you know, I'm always doing stuff, and I could record my movements and then turn the data into like maybe beautiful graphs, and that could just be a piece. So
movement of today, and then you have this picture.
Yeah, and like maybe I can, you know, just put them all together, like my right arm, my left arm, my this, and then maybe, you know, integrate kind of like my heart rate or something about how I was feeling that day towards the action.
Look?
How would that look? Mm-hmm. Just like the plotting of the data. I don't know. Maybe it'll look great and I can make a piece of it. Maybe it'll look horrible and I'm just be like, oh, well, it was fun. You know,
it was a bad day.
It was a bad day. But we'll see. I want to play with that. That and like balancing robots I want to make.
Wow.
That's visualizing sound in a different like dimension, and then like layering that with like your actual gestural memory movements, kind of like those weight loss bracelets, what's it called, the ones that count your numbers,
like the Fitbits.
Yeah, it's like an artistic Fitbit.
So like I had made a piece for two dancers once. It was just a ribbon, and in the center it had an XYZ sensor, so it could sense movement in three space and 3D space, and also like a velociraptor. No, that's a dinosaur.
We love
it measures the velocity of movement.
You know, doesn't the Wii do that too when you're playing tennis?
And yeah,
they use that
like
technology,
that.
Right?
So it would be for two dancers, but only they could hear it. They would use these bone conductors, or a type of speaker that you put up to your ear, and it makes like the bones in your ear vibrate. So you hear it inside your head. And so it's a ribbon. Each person puts it up to their ears. It has a little heartbeat sensor that goes on one of the fingers. So your heartbeat like affects the combined heartbeat of the two people wearing it affects the beat of the sound.
Cool.
How the sound comes in and out.
Nice.
And then their movement, like the tones. That's a fun piece. I had to remake it like five times because dancers would get like out of control and break it. I want to remake it. I haven't remade it in a while.
Would you remake it with those, what's it called, the VR goggles, so they could also see themselves in a different... I'm just thinking.
That's not a bad idea.
That's like I could see you doing this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't picture it in my brain because my brain is much slower than yours, but I think that you could program this into reality. It would take me years to figure out the code for this, but I'm sure it's lots of zeros and ones involved, but you could,
probably could,
that'd be so cool.
Yeah, but that is one more layer of separation.
Totally.
Though. Yeah.
But
yeah.
It would still be, because I feel that your work now must be layered. It can't just be the one thing.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Maria, your turn.
Wow.
Right? I blew your mind with that? I was thinking, I was like,
You did.
Yeah. No, you're still.
I feel like I'm almost in a different universe now with all these, options.
What upcoming projects do you think you want to discuss with us that you could share, unless it's like top secret?
Well, I kind of mentioned already the thing I'm going to do for PAPS. It's going to come out in September.
Cool.
We're going to do an open house at Mena Contemporary Miami at the 77 Mall. And
party.
I'm going to have that somewhere. Yeah. It might be like a 2-day thing. I don't know what we're going to do yet. We're trying to, make it nice. Let's see what people want to do. It all depends on the community always.
Always, yeah.
And then, of course, Art Week. But from November until January, I'm going to have a solo show at the Hollywood Art and Culture Center.
Congratulations, that's exciting.
And, it all depends on, what the curator wants, but I know what I want.
You will meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, of course. But what I want is I want a couple of pieces from, sound pieces that I did about post-Hurricane Maria, Puerto Rico, just because I think, it's still something that needs to be, talked about and looked at, and things
it cannot be forgotten. And no. I saw that Vice article you did.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were in it. Yeah.
And some from this series I did about Brock Pierce, and then I think a couple of the Balancing Robots and a couple of the instruments, more of the more personal stuff in there, just kind of like to show where I'm kind of going. You said to have something nice and round.
Mini retrospective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that. Just kind of like last 3 years of Rafa or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Title pending.
That's a good title. Title pending.
This is true. I wanted to ask, I was very curious, because when you talk about material and the selection of material, do you always how can I say, dumpster dive? Do you go out for materials or do you purchase? Or is it a bit of both?
It's a bit of both. Like, I don't actively go and dumpster dive. I see things sometimes and I'm like, oh, I want this piece of junk. I don't know why. And I'll put it in a closet, I'll put it in the studio, and then all of a sudden I'm like, hey, this is perfect for this.
Cannibalize it later, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a habit I've developed. I don't pick everything up. I'm not as much of a hoarder as I used to be. I've gotten a lot better about it. I only grab specific things. I don't grab everything. I'll think it twice, and I'll purchase things. But I try to purchase really accessible stuff. Like I try not to get materials that are high end. Except when I buy paint. When I buy paint, for some reason, I can't deal with cheap pigments.
What do you pick? What paint?
I usually go for golden.
Me too. I knew it. There's just nothing. There's just golden. It's so good. You can't go back after that.
No,
it's just
I feel like such a snob, but yeah.
So I love it. I just love it. I love it. I do.
And I also use those Montana acrylic sprays.
When
I
get lazy,
because
that's a pretty foo-foo brand too.
Yeah, I do a lot of airbrushing, and then when I'm get lazy about the airbrushing, and I'm like, I'll just go get a spray can and just forget about my lungs and just be lazy.
But Montana's quite particular; it's not like 99-cent Home Depot thing.
No, but the acrylic one is good, and I mean it won't peel off.
That's true.
And then you can paint on top of it, because I've had problems with mixing different layers of meeting, and then stuff starts peeling off or bleeding through. Or so I'm just like, sometimes you can fake it and just be like, yeah, I did it on purpose, but you know deep down that you didn't do it on purpose, so
you want to do it right.
So
you've been in Miami for a year now, right?
A little over a year, yeah.
You haven't, and you—that's the first time you've come to Miami. That you haven't been to Miami as a kid, or
Times because, weird enough, actually, when I was 5, my parents moved to Cincinnati to finish their master's degrees.
Cool.
My dad's a traffic engineer, traffic safety engineer, and
Airport? Is it airport?
General traffic, cars and bikes and anything in the public, you
transportation
know, transportation money. Money, all that stuff. Like, he's the kind of guy who, like, now, there'll be like a problem, like, oh, this intersection, there's a lot of accidents, and then like, he'll have
and
a
then he fixes
and
the,
then yeah, he'll look at us, make a study, and like make a proposal on how to fix it, and then have people fix it. He's pretty good at that. And then like my mom now is, what is she doing now? I think she's a nurse at a Catholic school. She used to run the Catholic school program. She's been a lot of education and nursing. She was a registered nurse and that kind of stuff. So, and then after that, my dad, after they finished their master's in Cincinnati, my dad got a job with the Florida Department of Transportation.
Oh,
and so we moved to Fort Lauderdale. Actually, didn't know anything about Florida, so we moved to Fort Lauderdale by the beach to some weird hotel that was super shady and bizarro. And my first experience on the beach, there was actually like an oil spill for some boat that was out, and like I got like oil on me. My mom had to scrub me off. Oh, it wasn't like super scary, like a little duckling full of like oil.
Did she use palm olive?
But it was a poquito.
Sorry?
Yeah, she
palm
used
palm olive. Sorry,
yeah,
palm
she,
olive.
She used palm olive and un cepillito, you know, to scrub it off. A little brush.
No.
Yeah, yeah. It was...
You were like those commercials.
Oh my God.
The poor little creature.
Yeah, like
hurricanes and oil spills. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. No,
whoa.
But, yeah, but then we moved to Margate. I lived in Margate and Tamarack in Broward County. And yeah, then I went to when I finished high school, I went to Atlanta, and then I came back here for a year. Then I went to Puerto Rico, and then
here. We came back here.
Yeah.
Where were you born?
In Mayagüez.
Mayagüez, Puerto Rico. I was wondering if it was San Juan, but it was Mayagüez.
And what do you think about Miami now that you've been here for a while, like as a grown up, and about the art scene also? Because
I love Miami. Miami's great. Like I felt very welcome from the first day I came here. There's all types of people. There's a good mix. All types of practices, and there's something for everyone. I mean, like I haven't had such a great outlet in the kind of stuff I do as far as like noise performance or some of my work. And here there's audience for it. There's people who appreciate it and who can understand it. And also like in the work realm, I mean, it's been real nice. And people in general have been really cool. I mean, just like, because I like all types of like scenes. Like I like the art scene, I like the music scene, I like the punk kids, I like the zine kids, I like all that stuff is really cool to me. Ever since like forever. So like here everybody does their things and everyone's connected because it's big but it's small at the same time.
Totally.
So I kind of still feel like I'm kind of like in Puerto Rico.
I was about to say, like, how do you feel?
You know, but
we're not
yeah.
an island, but we're still kind of a little island.
The water.
Yeah, close enough to the water. The weather is, you know, perfect for me. You know, I could walk down the street and still speak Spanish every once in a while. You know, I like it. And I like working for Mana. It's a great job, and it's a good company. They give us enough space to, you know, kind of work things out
and grow. It's been growing.
Grow.
Yeah.
I don't think we had a Puerto Rican artist before on the rocking chair.
I cannot confirm or deny that.
And I was also surprised when I was in New York recently. We went to the Museo del Barrio, and we had a lot of we saw a lot of artwork by Puerto Rican artists. And I also had the feeling that we don't have enough Puerto Rican artists in the museums here,
which is hilarious because
is that
Winwood
true, or
used
is it,
to be
is it,
predominantly I, Puerto Rican.
Yeah,
like this was a Puerto Rican community, Winwood, before.
Winwood was but they're not here anymore.
There's a few. Yeah.
Actually, the project I came here on for the residency was originally to investigate, like, you know, what happened to the Puerto Ricans and
when
did Puerto Ricans go?
Yeah. Probably New York.
Maybe. Yeah, I saw more Puerto Rican art in New York than I've seen here.
Yeah.
And I was surprised about that because it didn't, you know, occur to me before. Yeah. So I was like,
And maybe someone back to Puerto Rico were like, all right, I'm fine. I'm going to go back to Puerto Rico now.
Yeah. Have you been back since you moved here?
I went in Christmas. I went to the west side of the island, to Mayagüez, and just spent the time with my family there. Fortunately, I didn't have time to go visit my friends in San Juan. So, like, I have to go back pretty soon. soon and just spend like a, you know, a couple of days or a week over there. And,
mm-hmm. and because you're still struggling with the recovery. And
I mean, things are up 100%. Yeah. I mean, everyone's like positive and trying the best they can, but you know, it's difficult. You know, there's not enough police officers, not enough doctors, not enough medicine, sometimes not enough food. Like, you know, power goes away sometimes and comes back. You know, there's people in Center Island who still like are having water and light issues like pretty bad.
I saw documentaries about Puerto Rico where people were really taking it into their own hands to restore power and stuff like that because they were just waiting forever and nothing happened.
Nothing happens. No, I mean, it's one of those situations where, like, you know, right before the hurricane, the government went bankrupt because of junk bonds. I mean, everything was already like going down the drain.
It was broken already.
It was broken already. Like the infrastructure, like things hadn't been like fixed or maintained in like a decade or updated. Like not even like simple maintenance was done, you know, like the most basic stuff like wasn't done on infrastructure. So I mean, it like the hurricane was bad, but pretty much the situation before was pretty bad, and like the hurricane just kind of like was like, you know,
blew it open. Let me see any questions, because I know you give me the Maria, do you want to ask your final question?
My final question. You've been sitting on a magical rocking chair. Mm-hmm. It grants you three wishes.
Uh-oh.
And by the way, it has now a microphone attached to it and looks absolutely fabulous. Thanks to Artists About. Our rocking chair has a microphone attached to it.
Thank you, JC.
It's still magical. It's even more magical.
Okay.
So what are your three wishes? Unfortunately, you have to say them out loud. Unfortunately, you're not. Because otherwise, they won't come true. So, your three wishes.
I have to say them out loud.
Into the microphone.
Okay. And I could be real cheesy and say, like, world peace and world hunger and really great movies all the time. But
you could say like those could, or a good ending to Game of Thrones or something.
Right?
Those would be good. I don't watch that, so there's no spoilers.
Yeah.
You
no, actually, I'm like two seasons behind.
Oh.
Anyway.
I'm not going to say anything.
So three wishes. One wish would be like, you know, everyone, including me, would find like peace with themselves and what they're doing. It's silly, but it's a nice thing to shoot for, even though like you're probably never gonna get that peace.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's a nice thing to shoot for.
A little sliver would be nice.
I want that.
Just a little,
I want that.
You know, you get it every once in a while. You get that peace for like 3 minutes. You're like, and then like, you know, life hits you in the face. It's like, something else happens. But yeah, that would be one. Two would be, this one's like really gonna be like just really egotistical, like. I just don't want to want. I don't want to want. Like, that's like, you know, like the
that's
thing.
Very zen of you.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I don't think we've had that one before.
I think it makes people happy. That's what they tell me.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone who tells you that they don't want anything is full of shit.
Mm.
Totally. Come on. Come on. Because you want to not to want, so you want something, right?
We're human. We're human after all.
Right. I walk this line between like super positive and cynical at the same time. I don't know. That's just me.
It's entertaining.
And then the third one. My third wish is a wish for infinite wishes.
Yes. You cracked the jackpot.
All right.
Thank you so much for sitting with us.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to us.
And for those of you that are interested, you could look him up. He has an Instagram. Mana Contemporary has a website as well online. Show coming up in Hollywood, Art Cultural Center. We'll be looking for that November.
Yes, November 8th.
So lots of things around the corner.
That's right.
And Elisa and I will be back on Monday next week.
Believe so.
And by the way, if you haven't seen the Rocking Chair Sessions RCS 76-100 exhibit at Swamp Space, hurry over to see Oliver. We're closing the show on Friday or Saturday. Alrighty. Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Rafa.
Thank you. Bye-bye.